Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2011. Lecture 20, delivered on April 19, 2011. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 2.
Today, Review for Exam 2. I will give you my perspective on the exam, which of course is pretty important because I write the exam. And then I will entertain questions that you have about it. As always, if it's not going to be on the exam and you ask me, is this going to be on the exam, I will say, no, that's not going to be on the exam. And if you want to see examples of something, I can cover an example or two of things that you will find very useful to know for the exam. The format is the same as the first exam that you had. You will have that multiple choice section, same number of questions, and then from there you will have a workout section, problems that you will work out and get actual numerical answers for, and then you will have your essay section, for which will, as the last time, be five questions. You answer four of the five, one complete sentence, and grammatically correct and all of that kind of stuff, the good stuff. Now let me start out here. Just to give you some, try not to be too vague, but I can't tell you the questions. Multiple choice. Generally, those are more of the memory types of questions, as well as the technical definitions, those kinds of things. There are also some logical questions I could ask you. For example, as the time to maturity of a bond approaches, A, the bond approaches par, the bond approaches zero, the bond price approaches par, the bond price approaches zero, the bond price, well, things like that. That could be on their logic kinds of questions, thinking kinds of questions like that. I would also probably ask you for a simple net present value kind of answer. What's the net present value? Describe a brief cash flow. Have you tell me which of the answers it is, if it is any of them. You might be asked in that section about the relationship between internal rate of return and net present value. I could ask you about the relative prices of a bond that's not callable versus a bond that's callable, a bond that's not convertible versus a bond that is convertible. I could ask you those kinds of questions in the multiple choice section. I could also ask you some questions about relating to the component costs of capital. Well, what's the most expensive component cost of capital? What's the cheapest component cost of capital? I could also ask questions about details of common stock. Just some of the matters that I went through when we were talking about common stock. I could also ask you about certain types of instruments that I have mentioned, zero coupon bonds, ETSs, mutual funds, such matters as that. Like I said, there are a lot of different ways that those questions could be framed, but what I've just given you are some questions that could very well be on that exam, the ones that I just gave you. And that gives you sort of a broad frame of studying. Ask you questions about marginal cost of capital, how many break, if there are so many component costs of capital, how many break points would there be, all that kind of stuff. I suppose I could put the exam up on the overhead so you could see it.
Yeah,
do it. Do it. I could ask, like I said, make sure you know your terminology, like what do I mean by the face value of a bond? What do I mean by par value, discount to par, premium to par, those kinds of questions. Now let me take you on into section two, and I'll be very specific. You will have a narrative. It will be posted late tonight, and it will be one of the questions. In fact, it will be the marginal cost of capital question. You will have to take yourself through all of the things that you did on your worksheet, get the answers that are necessary, be able to frame your answers correctly. So if I say what projects are accepted, you don't say, well, A plus C. You write out the Terralene project and the Summer Wind project. You give it to me like a business professional would. And that's how it works. You'll give me answers about what the marginal costs of capital are, what the component costs of capital are, all of that kind of stuff. That's a major kind of problem, so that's why I give this one. In a class like this, there are some things that are easy to do in an exam, in a time limit. Some things that just take more time than you have for an exam. That's why I give these, so that you can get them prepped and get your answers ready for me for the exam. And remember, if I ask you to give me iOS MCC schedule, you do it with a straight edge. If you do it on the exam, you do it with the clear intent to show a professionalism about what you're showing, demonstrating to me. Now, I will give you a series of bond questions. In that, I will ask to describe a bond for you in terms of its coupon and its date of maturity. I'll give you the discount rate, and you tell me the price. I'll give you the price, and you will tell me the yield to, I will ask you for the yield to maturity. I will possibly go from there, maybe on to say, well, if the coupons were paid quarterly instead of semi-annually, what would your answer to the previous question be? Now remember, on an exam, you will assume that the payments are semi-annual, not annual. The coupon payments are semi-annual. That comports with the real world. Now I will ask you to give me a price of stock. I did that before in the first exam, but I will give it to you in the framework of the capital asset pricing model. So I won't give you the discount rate. You will first have to find the discount rate and then apply that correctly to find the cost, the price of the stock. I will ask you to find the degree of operating leverage, the degree of financial leverage, and the degree of combined leverage. That will be a question on the exam. Separately, I will ask you to find a net present value and an internal rate of return. And I may, although, no, I won't do that. No. Yeah, sure I should. Oh, no. No, I already took that one out. There's your workout section of the exam. Okay, that's your workout section of the exam. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it'll be enough to keep you busy and keep you at home at night. Now for the essays. I'm going to give you some heads up. What is the relationship between the weighted average cost of capital and the marginal cost of capital? Give at least two reasons why companies will raise capital with common stock issues, even though common stock is more expensive than debt. What do I mean by optimal capital structure? What is the relationship between the time to maturity of a bond and the price of a bond? Again, what is the relationship between the time to maturity of a bond and the price of a bond? Why would you choose to use net present value instead of internal rate of return in decision making for projects? What are the advantages of ETSs over mutual funds? And what are the disadvantages of ETSs over mutual funds? What is one distinct advantage of investing in an ETS or a mutual fund rather than in stocks directly? What is the advantage of investing in a mutual funds or ETSs rather than stocks directly? What do I mean by go public? What is meant when a company goes public? Why would an older person invest in preferred stock rather than common stock? What is the relationship between the price of a callable bond and the price of an identical bond that does not have a call provision? I think I already said this one. Well, I can stop right there. Okay, work it, boy. One more. I think I already said this one. What is the relationship between internal rate of return and net present value? I could ask that one in a multiple choice kind of framework, but it also works as an essay question. Remember, essay questions, there is one sentence that will do it. It doesn't have to be a run-on sentence. It's just a sharp, clear, uncompromising answer to my question. As I have said before, say what you have to say to me and then just finish it up. Be on your way. Let it go after that. Going on too long with those kinds of questions, in this case, you will begin to lose points. And you may, in fact, even earn a bullshit stamp. Valuable as it is, I tapped that ink reservoir. Valuable as it is, don't strive and aspire to my bullshit stamp. Now it's your turn. Ask me questions. You can ask me, is this going to be such and such going to be on the test? If it's not, I'll tell you no. Yeah. Yes, 4x6. Yeah.
Will you show the find the discount rate,
Common stock. Damn it. Common stock. In CJD Corp, just paid a 10-cent annual dividend. Which is expected to grow at 10% hereafter. If the expected return to the market portfolio is 12% and the yield on a short-term T-bill is 1.5%. What is the current price of CJD Corp Common if its beta is 1.2? Now, first things first on this. The price formula for common stock is P now will equal D1 over K minus G, where K is the discount rate and K sub S is the discount rate and G is the growth of the dividend. You're going to need to do two things. First of all, you're going to need to find dividend one. Well, obviously, you'll need to also find the growth rate, and you'll need to find the discount rate for common of CJD Corp. Again, D1 is the dividend one period from now. K sub S is the discount rate on cash flows from CDJ Common, CJD Common. And G is the growth rate of the dividends. So we need to find these. Well, D1 is going to be D0 times 1 plus G. We grow the current dividend one period. G, we have been given in this problem, G is 10%, 0.10. In case of S, we will find by finding the risk-free rate plus beta of the common times the return to the market portfolio minus the risk-free rate. So now we just crank. Just do it, stay frosty, just get the job done. D1. Our current dividend is 10 cents per share. Growing that one period at 10% will tell us that D1 is going to be 11 cents. The discount rate to use for our problem will be the short-term T-bill rate of 1.5% plus the beta of 1.2 times the expected return to the market portfolio minus the discount rate. Which will be 1.5% plus 1.2 times 10.5%. 10.5% represents the market premium, the expected premium of the market portfolio over investing in a perfectly safe instrument. So in this case, if I work that out, 1.5 plus 1.2 times 10.5, my ass, 1.5 plus 1.2 times 10.5, why does this suck? Times 1.2, yeah, my calculator's gone back to the way it was, plus 1.5. So that means that we will discount cash flows from CJD Common at 14.10%. So now we should be able to get this problem done. The price of CJD Common right now is going to be the dividend in one period, which is going to be 11 cents divided by the discount rate we found, 0.1410, make sure you turn it into a decimal for this, minus 0.10, the growth rate. And that'll be 0.11 over 0.0410. And you come up with a price, make sure that I did this calculation right, of $2.68. Is that what you got for it? Yeah. Does that answer your question? That's the current stock price, yeah. Yeah. You're using next period's dividend, but that brings you back to the current stock price because of the one period lag of present values backwards. That reminds me of a couple of more things that you should know about. Make sure you know not only how to use beta, but what beta means. Beta is the factor by which the market's expected premium over risk-free is magnified. Beta is the factor by which the risk premium of the market portfolio over, I'm sorry, I'm getting myself screwed up here. Beta is the degree, the magnification degree, the degree to which the market's expected premium over risk-free is magnified for a given stock. Put another way, beta measures the non-diversifiable risk of a security relative to the market portfolio. Beta measures the non-diversifiable risk of a security relative to the market portfolio. So a beta of 1 carries 100% of the non-diversifiable risk. Now, I gave you some indications about beta. So, for example, I asked you, what's the beta of a short-term treasury bill? What would you tell me? Zero. If I said, what's the beta of the market portfolio, you would tell me?
What does the market portfolio look like?
So it's one, is the market portfolio. If I were to say to you, well, the beta of this stock is 0.8. So buying this stock means that you have 80% of the risk of the market portfolio. Is that right? No. The non-diversifiable risk component of that stock is 80% of that of the market portfolio. That stock, I can promise you, will have more risk than you'd have getting your next girlfriend on Craigslist. That stock will have so much risk in it, but most of that risk will be diversifiable risk. Should you expect a reward for bearing non-diversifiable risk? The answer is not just no, it's hell no. You do not get rewarded for bearing stupid risk unless you are making a movie like Jackass or if you're going for the Darwin Awards. You see, you are given reward, and beta measures only the non-diversifiable risk component. So you can have stocks with relatively low betas, betas well below one, but you look at their price volatility charts, and they're just whipsawing violently. But that whipsaw, most of it would go away if that security were in a well-diversified portfolio. That's the important point, is that beta assumes you're not stupid. So beta does not measure all risk. Beta measures only the component of risk that you can't get rid of. By the way, just as a throw-out kind of question, do you remember what I said as far as just a simple rule of thumb for the number of stocks in a portfolio that would take away most of your diversifiable risk? Do you remember the number I threw out?
30.
Good. I'm impressed. Yeah. It doesn't take a lot. Now, you can shake out more and more, but every time you add more stock, you're getting less and less extra diversification out of it. And you also have to remember that the diversification principle at its most important would apply globally, not just to American stocks. But do you remember what I said was the definition of the market portfolio? I could very well ask that on as an essay question. Suddenly everyone's pen hits the paper again. Do you remember what I said was the definition of the quote-unquote theoretical market portfolio? It would be just informally, and you should look this up more. Yes?
Isn't it the amount of stocks you have with diversifiable and non-diversifiable risk?
No, that wasn't even in the right ballpark. Good Lord. How you're not old enough for the 60s to have been good to you. So the where the hell was I?
You were talking about market portfolio.
Ah, yes, the market portfolio is every stock in the portfolio in proportion to the company's weight in the economy. That would be the market portfolio. It would be impossible to do that. In other words, you would take every stock and you would have, let's say you would spend $1,000 on your portfolio, and then you would look at every corporation in terms of its market cap as a percentage of the total economy's market cap. And so you would put that proportion, those percentages, and apply them to how much of each stock you could buy. So Microsoft constitutes 1.2% of the total market cap of the market cap. Well, then we would put in 1.2% of the $1,000 would be Microsoft stock. Apple puts in, let's say, 1.4% of the total economy's weight. That would be 0.4% of the $1,000 you spend on Apple stock. And on down the line until you got to Al's mechanic garage and Baptist reading room and contribute that much percentage in that stock. So there you are. It's impossible to do, but we don't have to because we get most of the benefit of diversification with considerably fewer stocks. And you don't have to buy stocks to accomplish this individually. Because if you buy stocks individually and you're constantly adjusting them to keep them in exactly the right proportion, your transactions costs are going to paddle you. That's why you do things like mutual funds or ETFs, where the managers of the funds do the portfolio balancing for you, and all you worry about is just how much risk you want to take, and therefore choosing the mutual fund or the ETS that reflects your desire for risk. So if I were to tell you that I have an ETS that represents, that is the Dow Jones 30 Industrials, and I've got an ETS that is the Standard & Poor's 500, which one, if you were more of a risk taker, would you buy, or would you be indifferent? What do you say? Okay, you could get one ETS that was the stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial 30s. You could get another ETS that was the 500 stocks in the Standard & Poor's 500. Which one would you, which one, if you were a risk taker, which one would you prefer? Yeah, the S&P, simply because it's more companies, more, not all the giants, and all of that. It's got a little more risk. If you wanted to walk on the wild side, you'd find an ETS for the NASDAQ, Wilshire 2000 or 5000. If you were really crazy to lose your money, you might invest in an ETS that was backed by pink sheet stocks, OTC pink sheet stocks. But you can choose your level of risk without actually having to buy all the stocks and calculate the betas and work out the beta of your portfolio as the weighted average of the stocks. You can do it through ETFs and mutual funds. Or you can do it with straight stocks if you're into that kind of activity, which takes up not just transactions money, but will take up your time keeping an eye on the portfolio's balance. What else do you want to ask me? Got anything else? Yeah.
Can you tell us the answer
to number one on the test? I will limit the range. The answer is one of the five following. A, B, C, D, or E.
So no F or G
in there? No. There's your damn answer on the first question on the test. Yes. Yeah.
On a graphing calculator, what are the inputs that you use for NPV and IRR?
Let me do that. I don't have a graphing calculator. The TI-83. Let me actually give you a problem, okay? I'm glad someone brought that up. We'll do both the NPV and the IRR, okay? Okay. A project will cost $40,000 initially. It will then return $15,000 at the end of the first year. $12,000 at the end of the second year. $8,000 at the end of the third year. And $6,000 at the end of the fourth year. With a salvage value of $3,000. Do you accept the project or reject it? And you'll have to tell me the NPV and the IR, and then we'll look at the IRR as well. And let's just stand over someone's shoulder to make sure.
Apps?
Okay, yeah. Apps, I should tell you that first. Finance, go down to number 7, that's NPV. Hit enter and you'll come back to the main screen. Now you'll key in your interest rate, your discount. Oh, I didn't even give you. Okay, then, let's try a discount rate here. Discount cash flows at 6.5%. Just testing you there to see if you saw what I was doing. Okay, so again, apps, finance, 7 NPV, which 7 is NPV. You'll come back to the main screen, and then you're going to key in 6.5, then hit comma, Now you got. There are actually two ways, and I'll have to be careful about what I say here. Key in the negative 40,000, comma, open braces, and then put in 15,000, comma, 12,000. Comma 8,000, comma 6,000, close the braces. I'm sorry, that last one, key in instead of 6,000, you key in 9,000. I forgot about the salvage value. Sometimes I do salvage value, sometimes I don't. Why the hell are there shoes here? Whose are these? Wow. Oh. There. What's the answer you get? Does it give you an answer?
-17,600.
My ass. Negative what? -1,700. What is it? $16 and so NPV 6.5, comma, negative 40, comma, braces 15,000, 12,000, 8,000, 9,000, close the braces, close the parentheses. So, when I calculate the internal rate of return, which I will do next, can you tell me whether the number that comes out will be larger than 6.5% or smaller than 6.5%? Can you tell me that right now? Smaller. Because 6.5% was too large and it discounted the future cash flows so steeply that we came up with a negative NPV. So the IRR, in other words, if I were to calculate interest rate against NPV, I know that the value 6.5 is in negative territory for NPV. It's at negative $1,700. So I know that the IRR has to be lower than that, because the IRR is where I'll get an NPV of zero. So now we go back through the grinder. We do the same thing again for the IRR. Apps, finance, 8, which is IRR. You'll come back up to the main screen. Now pump in negative $40,000, comma, open braces, 15,000, 12,000, 8,000, I'm sorry, commas between those, 8,000, comma, 9,000. Close the braces, close the parentheses. Survey says, what is it? 4.35? I've noticed these calculators might give one decimal place of difference sometimes, but it should be about 4.39, 4.38%. As we can see, it was indeed lower. So if I had just given you an internal rate of return of 4.39%, this project has a 4.39% internal rate of return, and then I could have thrown any discount rate at you, you would have been able to immediately tell me whether you would accept or reject. Because any discount rate I would have given you above 4.39% would have caused the NPV to be negative. So you would have rejected. If I had given you 4%, though, I want you to discount these at 4%, these cash flows. You would have said, well, you told me the IRR is 4.39, so yeah, we'll accept it. I don't have to do the calculation. Okay? So make sure you know that because you could save yourself some pain if I give you a problem the right way. Yeah, go ahead.
You did a previous problem about this. What happens if you have, instead of having at the end of the first year, at the end of the second year, the amounts, I think it's the quiz you put, in the first 2 years.
You would just repeat a number there. The first, I could have done, the first 2 years, the cash flow is $15,000. The second 2 years, it's $8,000. You would just do 15,000, 15,000, comma, 15,000, comma, 8,000, comma, 8,000. I just added a little more detail to this one.
So if you just have it 2 years,
you put it in twice? Just put it in twice. Now, I know there's a trick that you can use on the BA2s for doing this. I don't think there's any trick to shortcut it on the TI-83+, but it's just a matter of punching in the numbers. Anyway, it's a lot easier than it was in the old days. Yeah. Say that again. A present value. The pricing of a common stock, the only way I'll be asking that question is with this, what I did here. That's the only way I would be asking for a price of a common stock. For a preferred stock. I can do a preferred stock. They're very straightforward. Good, yeah, okay, now I know what you're asking about. DZine Corporation preferred, has 3.2% preferred par value, $50 per share. What is the current price of DZine Preferred if its dividends are discounted at 2.9%? Take a wild stab. Is this going to be selling at a premium to its par or at a discount to its par, this stock? Is it going to sell at more than $50 a share or less than $50 a share? Talk to me. It's going to sell it more because its dividend is better than what the market says it has to be. So it will be above $50 a share. So the price of the preferred is going to be the dividend divided by the discount rate, or K. I use R's, I keep slipping back. No, it's not D0, D1, because there's never any growth. Preferred is preferred. It's the same amount forever. Now, the dividend is going to be the coupon rate times the par value of the stock. That's how the coupons are figured. Dividend. That's how dividends on preferred are calculated. They tell you a percent. They tell you a par value of the shares. And there's what you'll get as a check every year for the rest of eternity. So if we honk those in there, the price of preferred for this company would be $1.60 per year divided by 0.029. Don't use the wrong number there, for heaven's sakes. Don't put 0.032. That's not what we discount at. That's the coupon. And survey says, what? Okay, 1.6 divided by 0.029 is, sure enough, it's selling at a premium to its par. It's selling at $55.17 a share because it's paying a dividend that's better than it needs to according to the market. You got that one? Did that? You know, as much as these calculators get thrown around, working. What else? Yeah. Well, the only thing I can do, I wouldn't have you price one, this summer I'm teaching advanced financial theory and problems. We'll price them there. Now, I see you're already running to the registrar's office to do that. But the kind of question I would ask on that is just the relationship between a bond that's callable and a bond that's non-callable. And it's obvious that if the corporation can call in and pay off a bond early, that's adverse to the investors. So that means that the investors are going to punish that bond by pushing its price down relative to its non-callable counterpart. And that's the same thing as saying, well, if it pushes the price down, that means that the yield is pushed up. So we would expect callable and convertible bonds relative to bonds that are identical but without those provisions to have lower prices and higher yields. Similarly, if we had two bonds that were otherwise identical, but one was a mortgage bond and one was an unsecured debenture, then we would expect that the unsecured debenture would sell at a lower price and therefore have a higher yield, representing the greater risk you have as a bondholder without any secured assets backing you. Similarly, with other things like junior subordinated and all those different kinds of garden varieties of calculation. And by the way, just as an afterthought, and I think I already said this, I don't want you to know the different rating systems of Fitch, Moody, Standard & Poor's. I'm not really interested in you knowing those. I mean, it's pretty obvious when you're in junk territory. You see letters like C and D and all of that kind of stuff. But you always have to be cautious, too. Remember what I told you about ratings, rating services. These rating services that claim such insight into risks, they are the same rating services that were telling investors before the financial crisis that some of the companies that actually ended up going to hell were just fine. Standard & Poor's yesterday declared that U.S. government debt was going to be downgraded in its rating. The market peed all over itself for a few hours, headed down into the bowels of the earth, and then suddenly everyone said, no, wait a minute. Yes, the United States government is really going to go bankrupt and default on its debt. Yes, that's about to happen. And the market suddenly realized, oh. And then Moody steps in and say, we're not downgrading it. And so the market finally concluded the United States isn't going to default on its debt. It will always pay its debt. If it doesn't have enough tax revenue, it will print money. If it doesn't print money, hell, there are plenty of countries we still haven't attacked yet that we can attack and liquidate, for God's sake. Russia comes to mind. So does Arkansas and Wisconsin. Sorry. So, I mean, you can take that with a grain of salt, those rating services. They're good as at least an indicator, but they're also politically charged, and they're also not always right because the people who are in those services have their own incentives that aren't always pure. Go. You had a question.
Are there any questions about warrants on the test?
About what?
Warrants.
I was going to, and then I decided, no, that gets into stuff that if you take me for investments, 241 or one of those courses, yeah, I'll get you into some of the exotica warrants and all of those detachable warrants, non-detachable warrants. But I decided, no, for this exam, I won't ask that because you're already going to slash the tires on my car as it is.
What about
what? Which one? There were actually several parts to it. Yeah, are you talking about the one, the Federal Reserve under fire, or the economics of wreckage? Or the, what was the other one I assigned? I don't assign, no, I'm not going to ask you about them. I may on the final, but not here. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. I actually, it's on the exam right now. I haven't decided whether I'm going to keep it there. I'll probably throw it off. You won't have to do it. But you're obviously going to have to do it to get the answers anyway. But, you know, the thing is that you have only a limited amount of time to get this exam accomplished. And you've got a lot of territory. If you haven't noticed, my exams are a bitch. And so, I mean, they're bad enough as it is without piling it on you. What else? Get some rest. If you have a quiz that you haven't picked up, they're up here. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.